Good afternoon, you are tuned in Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, the 12th of April, year 2016. I'm Jeff Brown, I'll be your host for today. We'll learn about the Gastineau Humane Society's Run for Fun with Matthew Musselwhite and Carrie Howard. We'll learn about Tuesday's Mudrooms event. We'll learn about Awareness Program Coaching Boys to Men. And we'll learn about integrated preschool programs. That Writer's Almanac, Burnout, Music and More today on Juno Afternoon. Weather forecast for the rest of today, cloudy skies and scattered rain showers. High temperatures around 49 degrees. Forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies. Isolated rain showers, low temperatures around 41 degrees, and the forecast for Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers, high temperatures around 51 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Some help has arrived in a remote First Nation community in northern Ontario, which has declared a state of emergency over suicide attempts. But as Dan Karpinchuk reports, some Native leaders say long-standing issues which led to the crisis must be addressed.
Five mental health workers are now on the ground in Attawapiskat to help, and federal and provincial governments say they will do everything possible to put more supports in place. The chief and band council declared the state of emergency after 11 people, most of them young, tried to take their own lives last weekend. There were also 28 attempts in March and more than 100 since last September. The chief says local councillors are overwhelmed by the numbers and can't cope, and he fears there may be more attempted suicides. The national chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Perry Bellegarde, says it's positive that help is on the way, but that doesn't solve the real problem.
This is not a situation or tragedy isolated to one particular community or one region. This is a national tragedy. This is a national crisis, and it's there and it's upon us because basically decades upon decades of neglect and our issues and our concerns being put to the side. And so now you're seeing things bubbling up, but they've always been there.
Bellegarde goes on to say that according to the United Nations Human Development Index, Canada is rated sixth in terms of quality of life, but when the same indices are applied to its indigenous people, it's rated 63rd. He says what's required is a sustained commitment to address long-standing issues that lead to hopelessness and despair in remote Native communities, especially among young people. Those issues include widespread poverty, high unemployment, inadequate and overcrowded housing, drug abuse, and no resources to deal with many social problems. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
In Alaska, a whaling crew from the Yupik community of Savoonga last week landed its second bowhead of the season. Whaling is part of culture, and as KNOM's Emily Russell reports, it's also wrapped up in politics.
Throughout April, whaling crews camp out on the southwest side of St. Lawrence Island, about 40 miles from town. Elvin Nungwuk was on the crew that landed Savoonga's first whale in 1972. The elder says they've been going to the same spot ever since.
Now we call that the whaling camp Boorilak. That's where we're doing whaling now in springtime.
Whaling Captain Carl Pellwick Jr. landed the first whale of this season and the earliest in Savoonga's whaling history. Warmer ocean temperatures and stronger winds from the north make it easier for whalers to start their hunts earlier. A week later, the same crew harpooned its second bowhead. George Nungwuk is Elvin Nungwuk's cousin and was also on Savoonga's first whaling crew. He now represents the community on the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission. He says prep for whaling season starts thousands of miles from home.
In order for us to go whaling, we first need to go to Washington, D.C.
The Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission helps inform the International Whaling Commission, or IWC, which sets worldwide whaling quotas. Nungwuk says it's a complicated process and not without its problems.
Oftentimes our quota is used as a political football between non-whaling nations and whaling nations.
That's exactly what happened in 1978 when the IWC failed to pass a quota. Nungwuk says those were dark days for Savoonga. So after the IWC reestablished a quota, he says he makes sure the community follows all IWC protocols and fills out all the right paperwork. I'm Emily Russell.
The U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs will meet Wednesday to authorize the issuance of a subpoena for Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Gina McCarthy to testify next week at a field hearing on the Gold King Mine waste spill. Committee members, including Arizona Senator John McCain, are raising concerns about the EPA having no representation at the hearing in Phoenix. It will examine the EPA's response to tribes after last year's spill in the Four Corners. The spill devastated tribal communities, and both tribal leaders and lawmakers have criticized EPA's response, calling it poor and unacceptable. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net. Justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to a Juneau Afternoon. Our first guests in the studio are Executive Director of the Gastineau Humane Society, Matthew Musselwhite, and Board Member Carrie Howard, here to talk about a fun event, Run for Fun. That's spelled F-U-R, fun. Thanks for coming down the station today.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. We're happy to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So, Matthew, can you give us an overview of the Gastineau Humane Society, please?
Sure. Well, the Gastineau Humane Society is our community's local animal shelter. We're located, for those of you who haven't visited us, we're located at 7705 Glacier Highway, which is between Fred Meyer's and the building formerly known as Walmart on the old Glacier Highway. As far as services, obviously, we, as an animal shelter, we provide adoptions of pets, dogs, cats, and small animals to the people of Juneau. We also provide vaccination clinics, microchip clinics, and some grooming and things of that nature for pets.
How many people how many animals do you have there?
Well, it's a constantly changing inventory, Jeff. I looked this morning, and there's somewhere near 30, including about 8 dogs, 16 cats, and 10 smalls, which includes right now ferrets, a couple rats, and rabbits.
Ferrets, that's good. You have a groomer on board.
We do, yeah. We have grooming services there. You can also come in and rent one of our grooming facilities to wash your own dog. Perfect for rolling in dead fish season. If you don't want to do them at home, you can bring them in there. It's a nice elevated tub, so you can bring your dog in, walk up the little stairs into the tub, and do it at height. You don't have to bend down. It works great.
What other kinds of services are available for you folks?
Well,
we have
a doggy daycare program, which is great. You can bring your dog in the morning, pick him up in the afternoon. They'll be out on several walks during the day, play groups with other dogs. Great to socialize your dog, and when you pick him up at the end of the day, they'll be dog tired.
Tell me about volunteer opportunities, please.
Sure, yeah. Volunteer opportunities, there's lots of them. From real simple, you can come in and pick up a dog just to take for a walk through the neighborhood, take a dog on a hike with you, real simple. Check them in, check them out kind of thing. If you want to get more in-depth, you can come in and help with animal socialization, help with grooming of the dogs and cats, help with feeding, dishes, laundry, things of that nature. And then we have more advanced, such as board members and fundraising activities as well.
What kind of things do you on the board? What kind of things do you do on the board?
Well, the board has a diverse job of supporting all functions of the Humane Society. One of the main things that we do is plan for special fundraising events like this upcoming run. In the fall, we also have a pet calendar contest that we use as a fundraiser, and also our wine this past year / beer auction. That's a great fundraiser we have in November.
Tell me about the Run for Fun, please.
Well, it's a great event, Jeff. This is our second annual one, although in the past, I heard back in the late 90s, early 2000s, the Humane Society had a similar one called Running with a Pack. Ours is Run for Fun, Wag Your Tail, Hit the Trail. Dog-friendly event. We have a 5K run or a one-mile walk, and it's all held at the Mendenhall Campground, which is perfect with the loops for having kind of a way to manage the runners and the walkers at the same time. And this year's event is this Saturday. Registration that day starts at 10:15, the event at 11. And we have some great co-sponsors. We're partnering with Southeast Roadrunners, who's loaning us all their equipment, so it will be a timed event. Alaskan Brewing Company is there to offer free beer samples after the event for people over 21.
What about the dogs?
Well, the dogs, yes, they're not left out. There will be dog treats and dog water, and we have another sponsor called Chilcat Treatery, a new business in town that makes biscuits for dogs. There's going to be those biscuits available, and they've also donated a package of their biscuits as part of a free drawing that we're having.
But no Alaskan beer for the dogs?
Probably not.
No, they'll have plenty of fresh water.
We, Jeff, we also have a couple of door prizes. Wings, Airways, and Taku Glacier Lodge is giving away a flight up to the Taku Lodge for two. And Grateful Dogs of Juneau is also a sponsor, and they have a gift basket they'll be giving away at the event. We encourage people to pre-register at the Humane Society. Last year we had over 100 people in the race, and registration got really busy. If people want to stop by the shelter between now and Saturday and pre-register, we'll give them a free pair of Alaskan Amber or Alaskan Brewing sunglasses.
In all colors of the rainbow.
Yes.
Sounds pretty fun. You said 100 people last year?
Yeah, at least 100. I can't remember what the exact count was, but it was a lot more than we expected for the first year we were doing it. It turned out great. There was a lot of people with their dogs. All the dogs got along great. It was a tremendous event.
And we did it last September. This year we decided to, for spring, for a couple reasons. One, to just spread out our fundraising events, and also hoping for better weather. It's it might be rainy on Saturday, but luckily everyone knows around here bad weather always looks worse through a window, so come on out with your dogs and run anyhow.
That sounds fun. Is there a cost to take part in this?
Yes, there is. It's $20 per person for 18 and older, $5 from 6 to 18, and free for under age 6.
What's the oddest animal you've ever had in your experience?
We've had all kinds. From lizards. I think we had a monkey once years ago.
Gosh.
One of these little miniature small monkeys. We've had huge snakes. You name it. It's come in the front door.
There's a nice, wonderfully colorful chameleon there now named Whiplash. He's kind of become the Humane Society mascot, so he lives in a terrarium up near Matt's office.
And that's happening this Saturday?
Yes, it is. This Saturday, Mendenhall Campground. If people want more information, they can call the Humane Society, and we're hoping everyone will come out and support all the critters in this town who are looking for homes.
All right, thanks for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add? I forgot to ask.
Nope, I think we covered it. Thanks for the opportunity to talk today, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
It's 60 minutes past the hour. In the studio with me is Christy Erickson, Nami Erickson from Mushkanadi, here to talk about a workshop on Sunday. Christy, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Jeff, always a pleasure.
So tell me about the workshop, please.
Yeah, this workshop that we're having on Sunday is actually the second one that we've put on this season. When our board met last summer, we talked about kind of our current offerings, which usually was an open mic and a slam every month, and we decided to mix it up this season to be able to give people more education opportunities and more chances to revise and workshop their work together in a supportive environment. So, you know, similar people as the open mic and the slam, but just a more casual, informal, guided experience. So we had our first one back in January, and it was a lot of fun. It was a great success. We had about 15 or so people come and did a mixture of creative writing and performance activities. And now with our second one, we're doing it again, but this time it's a lot more focus on stage presence and really getting your work off the page and onto the stage.
Is there a quick hint or anything like that that you give people to, so they don't feel so nervous when they're presenting this, their inner soul?
A quick hint, yeah. Well, I think, you know, the nervousness stems from a lot of places, and one is an internal place about, you know, feeling confident in your writing and feeling like you have the practice to speak. And, you know, when I just finished a residency actually at Thunder Mountain High School, and we did some exercises that basically show that we all already know how to talk and we all already know how to express emotion and kind of speak clearly with what we're feeling. But there's just kind of that disconnect between that natural ability and then getting on top of, on a stage and reading your poetry. So I think the workshop really focuses on, one, reminding people that you already have these skills, and then two, figuring out what is that disconnect, what's that about for you personally, and what are some ways that we can practice it here in a supportive environment so that you're more comfortable, more confident to do it in front of other people.
Now you talked about a guided experience.
Yeah.
How do you guide somebody?
Yeah, well, we just have different facilitated exercises, so it's not a time necessarily where you'll come in and then everybody will read and then we'll just give you feedback. It's actually a guided experience where we have a variety of different exercises and things that we can practice together one at a time and sometimes as a group, and it'll be taught by three of us as teachers. So we'll have myself, DJ Derego, who brings a wealth of experience in spoken word performance and also improv theater, and also Austin Tagaban, who's a local actor and helped co-host our last open mic at the university. He's going to be teaching it with us as well to bring in some of those kind of dramatic and theater exercises that that he's used to.
Is there a cost?
The cost is we always try to make our activities or make our opportunities accessible for the public. So the fee is just $10 to $25 sliding scale, depending on what you can afford. And if $10 is too much, then we ask that you just talk to us and we'll work something out.
It's happening Sunday. What time again, please?
Yeah, it's on Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. We strongly encourage you to RSVP to save a spot. And you can RSVP at junopoetryslam@gmail.com.
Over the years, you've seen a lot of poets come through.
Absolutely.
That must be a good feeling.
Yeah, it's a tremendous feeling. And I think, you know, one thing I always say at the open mics is my favorite part is when the least likely poet takes the stage, right? We have people, sometimes a young kid will go up to the mic. Sometimes you see someone in a full uniform because they just got off work, you know, whether it's a fireman or someone in a suit, you know, getting off from session or whatever it is. And then joining us with some works that seem totally unrelated to their day life. So it's been a pleasure not only seeing so many poets take the stage, but to see poets from all walks of life get up there and share a piece of their story with us.
It's Sunday, they're asking for you to make an RSVP. And what's the number, phone number people can call?
The best way to do it is through email, junopoetryslam@gmail.com. But you can also call us at Kindred Post, 523-5053. And we'll get you RSVP'd that way as well.
As long as we get you in the studio, what's happening with Kindred Post these days?
Yeah, well, Kindred Post is rocking. We've made it through winter thanks to the local community supporting our work and supporting our business. And we're kind of gearing up for the summer season. And we're really excited because next week we're going to have a tiny post office concert featuring Marion Call and a couple of out-of-town guests who are here for the Alaska Robotics Comic Convention. So we've got a bit of a serious, silly kind of tiny post office concert, and that's going to be on Thursday. Hopefully I can come back a different day and tell you a little bit more about that.
And you have a website.
Yeah, you can check us out at kindredpost.com, or you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram.
Christine Nami-Erickson, thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
That's all, Jeff. Thanks so much. I appreciate you asking about the different things that we're working on downtown.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 12th of April, 2016. 1861, on this date, the Civil War began when Confederate troops fired on Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor in South Carolina. 4:30 in the morning, beginning a war that would ultimately cost 620,000 American lives. The Confederates held Fort Sumter for 4 years and then abandoned it when William Sherman, General Sherman, captured Charleston in 1865. It was on this day, 1633, that Galileo Galilei was put on trial by the Inquisition for supporting the theory that the Earth revolves around the sun. Gustave Flaubert's first novel, Madame Bovary, was published on this day in 1857, became a great sensation, a novel about a woman who has multiple affairs to stave off the boredom of her life. Franklin Delano Roosevelt died on this day in 1945 of a cerebral hemorrhage at his home in Warm Springs, Georgia. And that evening, Eleanor Roosevelt called Vice President Harry Truman to the White House to tell him that he was now president. He asked her, "Is there anything I can do for you?" And she said, "Is there anything we can do for you? You are the one in trouble now." It's the birthday of Beverly Cleary, born in McMinnville, Oregon, 1916, became a children's librarian in Washington State, and she noticed that many of the children who came to the library complained that they couldn't find books about children like themselves, and so she set out to write a whole series of books about a girl named Ramona Quimby. Ramona Quimby, who draws pictures in library books and who locks her friend's dog in the bathroom and wipes paint on the neighbor's cat. It's the birthday of the poet Gary Soto, born in Fresno, California, 1952, worked as a farm laborer, then in factories. Gary Soto, who wrote, "They say you have a tattoo of a butterfly on your thigh, but how will I know that you can uncurl cigarette smoke at will, that you can cuss in 6 languages, that your last boyfriend is using a whole box of Kleenex to wipe away his river of tears?" Here's a poem for today by Carrie Shippers, Vocational Training. "I sound so much like my mother that when people called our house for help, I'd have to stop them halfway through their stories. Hold on, I'd say, I'm not her. When I went with her on calls, I hovered in doorways, holding her equipment, watched her walk to the center of what was wrong. I knew I could memorize facts, anatomy, the math of giving oxygen or shock, but I needed her to teach me what the body wanted. What I learned was common sense. Apply pressure to bleeding. Stay as calm as you can. I'll never have her hands, the power I saw her wield, but sometimes I feel her voice in my mouth. Get some ice and you'll be fine. It doesn't need stitches. It's only a scratch. Even when I'm the one speaking, my mother's voice knows what to do." Vocational Training poem by Carrie Shippers from Family Resemblances, published by University of New Mexico Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. And by TIAA, whether it's investing, advice, banking, or retirement, TIAA is committed to helping those who do good do well. Learn more at TIAA.org. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Summer is right around the corner. Are you wondering what to do with your kids this summer? Come to the Summer Youth Activity Expo at Centennial Hall on Saturday, April 16th, between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m., and check out all the great summer options. With over 20 youth-serving organizations represented, there is surely something to do that will be perfect for you. That's the Summer Youth Activity Expo, Saturday, April 16th, from 10 to 2 at Centennial Hall. Brought to you by Juneau Parks and Recreation. Call 586-2635 for more information.
It's 27 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juneau Afternoon. Our next guests in the studio are John Blasco and Cecilia Westman, here to talk about Program Throughwear, Coaching Boys Into Men, observance of Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Jeff.
So, could you tell me more about the program?
Right, so Coaching Boys Into Men is a violence prevention program for athletic coaches to use with their teams. It was designed to inspire young men to have respect for themselves, others, and women and girls. It was it's an evidence-based program that was originally designed in California by a group called Futures Without Violence.
John, what can you tell me about it? You're a coach.
Yeah, I coach the Thunder Mountain Boys basketball team, and we implemented this program about 7 years ago. It was Aware brought it to my attention as a new coach, and we implemented it within the guys, and it's a great program to really open up with your young players, you know, beyond just talking about the sport you're coaching. So.
What are some ground rules that you have to start
sure.
out with?
It's a 12-week program, and you can shorten it up depending on your season. But it's the ground rules really are creating dialogue with your players, and it's covering all the areas that, you know, parents, teachers, and coaches all should be relaying to our young men in our society, how to respect one another, how to respect relationships, how to respect your peers and your partners in life, and avoiding violent situations, and knowing how to treat your partner in a relationship, both just as a person and in sexual situations. So it covers a lot of areas that coaches can help grow these young men into being respectful, quality individuals to better our society.
What kind of tools do you use?
So there's the Coaching Boys Into Men packet that's provided. Aware has them, and they provide a packet that actually has everything in it that a coach needs. They have all the information to provide the letters to any parents or administration. It provides the curriculum that you follow for how you should, what topics to address and questions to bring up with your players. And then it helps you with how to connect with organizations such as like the Aware Shelter and the Juneau Empire to publicize what you're doing, to make it known to the community of what kind of program you're doing with your young men.
Also included in that curriculum is how to intervene if one is to witness a violent situation. The curriculum focuses a lot on how to create dialogue, and so it might give some message prompts on how to start those conversations with young men that might be difficult to have otherwise.
Mm-hmm. How long is the program?
It's a 12-week program. It could be adapted to whatever sports season is being played at that point. The conversations can last 10 minutes. They can last 30 minutes. It depends on how long the slot of time is that the coach has available to have that conversation with their team.
What do you find that the major issues are when you're giving them new information to handle their lives with?
probably the main challenge is just getting the young men to open up about it. The conversations aren't necessarily the most talked about or comforting ones at times. And so just getting them, these young kids, to open up and want to have that conversation. But once they do, it creates a relationship and connection that I don't think I had with my players beforehand. And so that's where I think it's important for coaches to realize that the impact that they're having is beyond just, you know, how to dribble a ball, how to throw a baseball. It's how can we help these young boys become better men, and you form a relationship that's long-lasting.
How do you break the ice?
The program starts with a very simple, more basic topic, which is kind of the easy icebreaker into things. But really, it's you kind of just jump in. You kind of just bring up the topic, and you jump in with the players, and you try and open up the dialogue back and forth, and you ask them the questions to get them to provide the input.
About how many youth are involved already?
Right now, let's see. My basketball program was about 39 kids. Juno Douglas High School does it as well under Coach Kasperson. I think he has about the same number, about 35, 40 kids. Mm-hmm. And then Randy Quinto, I'm not sure, Cecilia, how many he has, but he's doing it as the football program.
Mm-hmm. So the football program at Thunder Mountain High School with Coach Randy Quinto, he has probably 40, 45 players, I believe. Mm-hmm. So this program is implemented every year, with every season for each of those sports, with basketball and football. So you might get a new batch of kids, and you might get kids that have already gone through the curriculum and might be a little bit more comfortable having those conversations. And so they can help the other children who are not quite aware of the topic or the comfort level to engage in that topic.
Are you looking for more coaches now?
Yeah, right now we are looking for some more coaches to participate in a training that we're going to be hosting here in Juneau on the 19th. Yeah, it's going to be the 19th and the 20th, and it's for school district administrators, athletic directors, and coaches of male athletic teams. If people want more information, they're welcome to call our prevention team at AWARE. That number is 586-4902.
I imagine just as hard as it is for the youth to open up, it's hard for the coaches to open up for themselves too.
Yeah, I believe that to be true, but that's kind of where teaming up with the AWARE shelter and this Coaching Boys into Men program enables both the coaches and the youth to have the conversations that are important and need to be had, and provide the tools to do them. You know, I think growing up, our coaches didn't necessarily have that direct conversation every week based on a script, but they had that conversation based on what was happening around their players in life. So now, you know, it was happening back, you know, growing up, but now it's happening through a program and guidelines and tools. So it's very important for the coaches as well.
What kind of time commitment are you looking for from the coaches?
For the training?
Yes.
The training, so it's going to be 2 days. The first day is only going to be a half day, and then the second day will be a full day. And then with the teams, it's a matter of having regular conversations with them at least once a week.
I've been talking to Cecilia Westman and John Blasco about the Coaching Boys into Men program through AWARE. Is there anything you'd like to add that I forgot to ask?
Yeah. If you're experiencing any domestic violence or sexual assault, please feel free to call us at 586-6623. Thank you.
And I'd just like to encourage anybody that's coaching youth to contact AWARE for this training, because it's very valuable and something that I'm definitely very proud to have been a part of and doing in my program. And I think that coaches should reach out and get involved with this training to see how it can help with them and their programs.
Just as the youth might get something back from the program, what do you think the coaches get back?
I think it's realizing that our impact on these kids is lifelong, and that if we're putting up, you know, creating a positive environment and guiding them for the future as they're impacted by all this social media and other, you know, social impacts that are, I think, everyday in life, that it's helping them grow, and hopefully they're putting them in the right situations, like Cecilia said, that if they encounter a situation such as domestic violence, they can say something and they can help prevent it for the future.
And what do you get back?
And what do we get back is the satisfaction that we're helping grow the youth in our community. I mean, I love Juneau and born and raised here, and I want it to stay strong with the men starting from the top and helping our youth continue for the future.
All right, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Jeff.
This is Bird Note. When a canyon wren sings, the brilliance of its descending notes can stop you right in your tracks. But when its cousin, the marsh wren, sings, you may reach for your earplugs. Why do two closely related birds sing such contrasting songs? One sweetly musical, one harsh, jarring, and repetitive. The answer lies in where they sing. For a song to be effective, for it to be heard loudly and clearly by others of its species, the song must carry well in the bird's habitat. The canyon wren inhabits canyons and cliffs, a domain of hard stone. Its silvery notes bounce wonderfully across its stony realm. In contrast, marsh wrens sing from deep within dense reeds and cattails. Their songs are loud and low-pitched, flurries of short, hard notes, songs evolved to power through a mass of vegetation. We humans may find one wren song more pleasing to the ear than the other, but in the wren's world, where song is essential to attracting mates and repelling rivals, it's all about being heard. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
The Juneau Audubon Society will sponsor two 2016 cruises to Berners Bay this year on Saturday, April 30th and Saturday, May 7th at 8:30 a.m. This year, on May 7th, there will be five small whale watching boats with 20 passengers each. All vessels depart from Stadter Harbor below Dehart. Audubon members will be on board to act as naturalist guides. Stellar sea lions, harbor seals, bald eagles, humpback whales, and tens of thousands of gulls are just some of the species observed around this time of year. Tickets and information available at Hearthside Books.
30 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned to Juneau Afternoon. Our next guests in the studio are Steve Suing and Pete Metcalf, here to talk about mudrooms. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Jeff.
Thank you.
It's happening tonight, just a couple hours away at 7 o'clock.
Northern Light Church.
We're expecting a bit of a crowd. Of course, this season five, we've had quite a few big crowds, but I'd recommend that people get there a little bit early so they can stake out their seat and make themselves comfortable for tonight's event.
Tell me about mudrooms, so people haven't experienced it before.
So mudrooms is a community event. It's a storytelling event, and it happens during the fall, winter, and spring months. And we invite speakers to tell a story on a specific subject. We try to keep the subjects or the themes a little bit broad so people can come at them from a number of different angles. We have those seven storytellers that tell a story. It's we encourage them to have it 7 minutes in duration, and we ask for a $7 donation at the door, and all of those proceeds go directly to a nonprofit in our community.
What's the theme for tonight?
Tonight's theme is Back in the Day.
And how do you interpret that?
If I was telling a story tonight, I'd probably tell a story of something that happened to me in my younger days, or maybe even coming before I came to Alaska 16 years ago. I think, like I mentioned, it lends itself to come out in a number of different directions. Back in the day could be last week at Folk Fest, or it could be decades ago. So I think looking for a wide array of stories that come at that theme from all different angles.
And Pete, this is your first time as a mudroom teller.
Yes, it is.
Do you have your story all ready to go, or do you still have to practice?
I've been obsessively practicing it. It's a tough form, I'll say that much.
How did you nail it down to finally know what you're going to talk about?
Well, the theme back in the day, and I was thinking, well, I don't want to talk about any of my young adult escapades that could, rope in some people in the audience who I want to protect the guilty, in other words. But I thought back in the day, well, about as far back as I can go is my earliest memories, and that is around the statehood era, and And this particular story is about a trip I took with my late father, Vern Metcalf, through the hinterlands of Alaska back in about, I think it was around 1960 or so.
Have you timed it out, or are you still working on nailing it down to 6-7 minutes?
I think I'm pretty sure I have it under 7 minutes, but like I said, it's really a tough form. It's like a short story. Brevity is everything, and it's really easy to get off on a tangent, begin explaining something, and so I've just promised myself no tangents.
Who else is telling tonight?
We've got a great lineup tonight. Governor Bill Walker's in the lineup this evening. Danny Peterson, Angel Collins, Amanda Babin, Peter Metcalf, who's here with me, Jeannie Monk, and Carl Clark are in the lineup this evening. So all proceeds this evening are going to Meals on Wheels, who's do a wonderful service in our community of delivering hot meals to those type of folks that can't get out to maybe get themselves a meal, or preparing a meal can be a bit of a challenge. So this is our third event that the proceeds are going to that organization.
Do you have an idea what the next theme is going to be?
I do. You know, we are in the process of setting up our themes for season 6, so the themes are set well in advance. But Whether or Not is our final show, and that happens in May, and it's May the 11th.
Peter, are you nervous?
Very. Yes, I've been bumping into things, just trying to recite it in my head, and there are people who can get up on stage and do this like effortlessly, not me. I mean, I'm happy in the anonymity of my office writing stories or writing histories and what I do for a living, but I just haven't stood up in front of an audience and told a story like this ever before, so it's new.
How do you adapt something from the written page to the spoken word?
Well, come down to Mud Rooms tonight, and you'll see if I've successfully made that transition.
You make Steve Suing, and talking about Mud Rooms opening tonight at 7 o'clock, and get there early, because the seats wind up getting taken very quickly.
Yep, I think it's going to be a well-attended event this evening.
Anything you'd like to add about it, if you're going to ask?
I'd just like to say that, you know, we're in season 5, like I might have mentioned before, but Mud Rooms has been an amazing event happening here in the community. And to date, we've passed through just under $57,000 that's been donated at the door to nonprofits in our community. So not only is this an event for anyone to get up and tell a story, but it's also a great event for, I know, audience members that would never tell a story, but a great opportunity for them to connect with people in their community, and also donate, sometimes unknowingly, to a good cause within our community.
Steve, did you mention the price, admission?
It's $7. Yep, is the recommended donation, and of course, we will take more than $7. I'm sure Peter's story might be worth at least $8.
Oh, easily, yeah.
Thank you for coming by.
Thanks,
Thank
Jeff.
You, Jeff.
Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays noon until 6 p.m. Schedules are available online at juno.org/park/diamond park. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
Stephen Ochoa, a brand new CD to the station here. You're tuned to it in the afternoon today. My next guest is Stacy Juve. Here's a sport teacher for the integrated preschool program. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. Pleasure to be here.
So first of all, what is an integrated preschool program?
Well, the integrated preschool program is a preschool program that we offer here in Juneau, and it's a program for students who experience developmental delays, as well as a program for kids who we're more typically developing, who are peer models for the students who experience delays.
What are some of the big challenges?
Some of the big challenges, I would say, one is just enough time to squeeze everything in that we want to teach kids through preschool, and enough time to get outside and play. Some of the challenges as well is just in the referral process, and kids who, when parents or community members have concerns about kids with developmental delays, just making sure that they are channeled to the school district so that we can evaluate the students and see whether they not they qualify for services.
What is a delay?
So a developmental delay, it is a qualification for special education, and there are a variety of categories in which kids can qualify. But a developmental delay is usually when kids have a 20% delay in two areas of development, such as cognitive thinking, motor development. Typically, language development is a big area where we see a delay. So a 20% delay in two areas or a 25% delay in one area qualifies a student for special education services.
Are these delays like autism? And
yes, sometimes they are. Sometimes students have diagnoses such as autism or ADHD, but oftentimes it's just a general delay, and we don't exactly know the roots of the delay, but we know that how to intervene, let's say with language, or how to intervene to help kids get along better, increase their social skills and their play skills. So sometimes they have diagnoses, but often it's just we see the delays and we intervene from there.
How many students in the school system are part of this program?
Let's see. We have seven integrated preschools across the school district. So I'd say right now we probably have about 65 to 70 kids who are on IEPs, and probably about 45 to 50 peers who serve as peer models for those students.
I imagine there's a certain amount of training that has to be.
So the training, we have a special education teacher in every single classroom, and so all those teachers have special education background. Obviously, they also all have a degree in early childhood education. So they take what they know about early childhood and what they know about special education and use those skills. And then we have paraeducators in our classrooms as well. And those paraeducators in the classroom receive training from the district throughout the school year. Also, we don't have school on Mondays, and so that's a day where special education teachers work with their pairs to provide training specific to students, and also just general strategies that they can use with students in the classroom.
And you're a support teacher. What are some of the many things that you do?
So I work as a special education support teacher throughout the district, and I wear several hats. One is that I work with all the preschool programs, and so sometimes I'm working with teachers if they have a student in particular they're struggling with. Sometimes I work with parents who are new to the system or are confused or just have questions about our program, special education in general or specific to the preschool, so I work with families. Behavior is another one of my areas of expertise, and so I work a lot in situations where students are presenting challenging behaviors, and I help teams work through what we can do to prevent those behaviors from happening. So I wear a variety of hats, but those are the main things that I do.
What are some of the tools that you have in your toolbox, Tom?
I'd say some of the tools that I have in my toolbox with regards to behavior is one, really looking at a child's strengths and really trying to build on those strengths. A lot of times when kids are experiencing behavior issues, it's easy to look at all the things they're doing wrong. So one of the things is we look at what are their strengths, and let's say sometimes older kids are really good with younger kids, and so we might pair that older student up with a younger student, and every day, just part of their daily schedules, they get to go read with a younger student. And we really put in a lot of preventative techniques to prevent the behaviors from happening so that, you know, the kid experiences more success. All the adults are a little bit happier, too, with the decrease in behavior. So I'd say that's the big thing, is really building on kids' strengths and preventing those behaviors from occurring in the first place.
What makes you excited about going to work each day?
I think one of the great things about that gets me up and going every day is just the immediate impact that we see when we intervene with kids and helping to provide better services for kids who experience disabilities across the district. Whether I'm working with teams or whether I'm working with parents on strategies that might work at home or just educating parents and or teachers about different disability categories and things that they can do at home or at school to help make kids' lives easier. So it would definitely brings me a lot of pleasure professionally and personally.
I'm talking to Stacey Juth. She's a support teacher for the integrated preschool programs here in Juneau. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Yeah. So right now we are recruiting peers for our integrated preschool program, and the applications can be found at junoschools.org. So we're looking for kids who are aged, there'll be 3 by September 1st, and who are up through 5 who aren't of kindergarten age. So we're looking for peers to come out and take part in our preschool programs. We have preschools in every single one of our schools starting next year in the fall. And again, those applications can be found on junoschools.org.
All right. Thanks, Stacey, for coming in.
Yep. Thanks a lot for having me, Jeff.
Do you or someone you care for live with chronic pain or a chronic disease like high blood pressure, diabetes, or heart disease? You can learn to manage the symptoms, understand the disease, and communicate more easily with providers. Find a list of Living Well classes offered around the state at livingwell.alaska.gov. This message, sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services and the American Diabetes Association, aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
Junior afternoon, Scott Burton will be your host. We'll learn about the community-supported fishery program with CISCA's JoJo Cox. Reggie Moore and Sean Blumenschein will be here to spotlight the upcoming Maritime Festival. We'll learn about Operation Clean Sweep with guests Bruce Stanton and Kathy Steppen. We'll be here with details about mosquito-borne viruses. That writer's almanac, Bernard, using a more on a June afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, rain showers in the evening, then scattered rain showers later on. Low temperatures around 41 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers, high temperatures around 50 degrees. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 35 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 50 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to a June afternoon today.
This is KTOO Juno.